Produced at CFIS-FM in Prince George, Health First is available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
We have been talking to Dr. Kate Room, naturopathic physician and author, and we've been speaking about sleep and stress and ways to alleviate the stress in our lives and get better sleeps. So if we're working on trying to get at least 7 hours sleep a night, does it matter if we have like an afternoon nap for 2 hours and only 5 hours at night? Does it need to be an unbroken sleep?
There is something to be said for the unbroken sleep, because we need a certain amount of hours of continuous sleep in order to get a proper balance between that deep and light sleep. We do most of our deep sleeping that's physically restorative early in the night, so between the time you go to bed and around 1 a.m. And then after that point, the balance of the sleep shifts, and towards the wee hours of the morning, 3, 4, 5 o'clock, that's when we do more of the dream sleep. And so there is, to a certain extent, an advantage to getting that, length of sleep, so you can have both types of sleep. But if not, if you can't manage that, then absolutely, and you can manage a nap in the afternoon, then, yeah, go for it, because it, to a certain extent, the hours in the day, the number of hours you can rack up in 24 hours does make a difference.
It does make a difference. And how about these shift workers that have to work all night and sleep all during the day? Is there any help or hope for them?
That is tough. It's hard on the body for sure, but we also know lots of people have to do that for very important jobs. And so one of the things I recommend is to, in the mornings, not necessarily try to turn to melatonin to trick your brain into thinking that it's nighttime when it's daytime, but choosing something like, for example, just L-theanine on its own, or there's another amino acid called GABA, that will help you unwind, so your natural fatigue will take over, especially since not everybody who works shift work is doing this continually. Sometimes it's a week on, a week off, that kind of thing. So that's probably a good way to try to get to sleep throughout the day. But again, as much as possible, maintaining a routine where you're getting up and going to sleep at the same time every day.
Do the old-fashioned Nervine herbs still have a place, like the passion flower, hops, skullcap, valerian, all that? Do they still help?
Absolutely. I love those old herbs. They're tried and true, truly, for a reason. And they can calm the mind and the nervous system down, sometimes in a way that other ingredients can't. And so I really like those as a combination and an option. And some people, for whatever reason, don't like or want to take melatonin, or there's a small percentage of people that say that gives them funny dreams. Mm-hmm. And so for those people, I really like the melatonin-free options of herbs like the skullcap, passion flower, those kinds of things that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Is there any science behind those weird dreams and not feeling very good for a small portion of people on melatonin?
I haven't seen whether there's any science behind that, but there's certainly a small but distinct portion of people who will say, not that often, but they'll say, oh, it gives me funny dreams, I don't know why that is.
But our dreams are basically our subconscious coming out, isn't it?
That's true.
Just a little scary. So valerian is probably one of the strongest nervines in the old-fashioned herbs. Would you say in your practice that it would be not good for people who are prone to depression, or that valerian's not for everybody?
I would say valerian's not for everybody. Like any other ingredient, you want to try, and there's a certain amount of trial and error to see how you respond to individual ingredients, and some people respond better than others, but it's still one that is generally fairly well tolerated, and people get good results with it. But also, you're right, not the first one I would pick for individuals who are depressed. I would turn to more something like 5-HTP, which helps with sleep, but also with mood.
Mm-hmm. And even a good balance of minerals and helps with our sleep, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. So, especially at bedtime, I love magnesium.
Mm-hmm.
This is one that is it's a relaxing mineral, anti-stress mineral. It's used for so many functions, over 300 functions in the body. It's one that will help or can help with leg cramps, restless legs, and just a very nice, relaxed sleep quality.
And what would you suggest just for a dosage of magnesium in the evening?
Mm-hmm. Depends on the form of magnesium that you're taking. And it also, this is one that I see a wide variation from individuals. Usually 150 milligrams is a good place to start of a magnesium citrate, for example, or bisglycinate. That's a good dose to start at to see how you feel, and that may be just enough for you to feel relaxed and go to sleep. Other individuals I've seen take double or even triple that at bedtime to help them relax and get a good night's sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so many good things that you can do for sleep or stress. Dr. Kate, I know that you've done so much research as well on K2, so I just wanted to pick your brains for a few minutes on K2. And could you tell us a little bit about what it is and what you learned from it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, vitamin K2 is a nutrient that was overlooked for a very long period of time and is one that works with vitamin D to help keep calcium in its place. So vitamin D helps us absorb calcium, which is great, but once the calcium is absorbed, vitamin D has no control over where it goes. And so vitamin K2 will take the calcium and direct it into our bones, and just as importantly, we'll make sure it doesn't end up lining our arteries or other areas we don't want it to be.
So it would help keep kidney stones and gallbladder stones and all that kind of a way too?
Kidney stones, heel spurs, depending on the type of gallbladder stone, that can be helpful anywhere. And you can get crunchy bits of calcium in shoulders and spines and other joints, and anywhere the calcium is building up that it shouldn't be, K2 is potentially helpful.
And very safe?
Very safe, yes, absolutely. It has been tested at quite high levels. It shouldn't be taken by people on the blood-thinning drug warfarin because it counteracts that drug, but other blood thinners like Plavix, aspirin, these kinds of things, non-warfarin blood thinners, are fine, and otherwise it is very safe.
Okay, and where would we have found that in our natural diet to get K2?
Mm-hmm. Two main sources. First are grass-fed foods. So it's a fat-soluble vitamin, so you'll find this in the yolk of hens that are out on the pasture eating grass in their diet, or grass-fed butter, for example. I know that's not very common or easy to find. And then the other one is certain types of fermented foods. So some but not all bacteria will make vitamin K2. So some types of cheeses like brie, gouda, and Jarlsberg, for example. And there's also a Japanese fermented soybean food called natto that's very high in vitamin K2.
So if I want a steady diet of brie cheese, how much do I get to eat a day?
Oh, depending on the variety, you're looking at about 4 ounces of brie cheese giving you a very, very high amount of vitamin K2. But even if you're having a little bit of brie, a couple of ounces here and there, that helps get the K2 into your diet.
Mm-hmm. And how did you come about all this research? Where did it start?
Well, I started reading studies about vitamin K2 in the early 2000s, maybe 2005, actually. And I was surprised at the amount of research that had been done on this nutrient, and nobody was talking about it. And the more research I did, the more digging I did, the more studies I found, and that's why I decided to write a book about it.
Mm-hmm. And what else did you learn about the calcium and the quality of calcium, and where it should come from?
Well, I did learn that that people who take calcium supplements in high doses can have increased risk for heart attacks and strokes. That was another important reason why I wrote the book. It's not just a matter of having calcium. You want to get it to the right places.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's an important message that I want to get out there, too.
And so what forms of calcium were the healthy that your body could pick up and absorb rather than store in wrong places?
I really like calcium from fermented dairy products, as we were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Plant-based calciums as well, where you can get them. Those are the ones that I prefer. Yeah.
Yeah. So limestone, rock source, any of those really that coming from rock or earth are a little more difficult to deal with.
Exactly. I mean, ultimately, it has less to do with the type of calcium and more to do with the vitamin D and K2 that will keep it in its place, but there certainly are forms of calcium that are better absorbed and processed, like MCHC and plant-based calciums definitely more so than say the calcium carbonate that you would get in your average drugstore calcium supplement.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Kate, it's been so wonderful to have you on the radio today and teach us how to have better sleeps and keep our bones stronger. Is there anything else you'd like to add to today before we close off?
That if you're not sleeping well, or as well as you'd like to be, or waking up unrefreshed, there are lots of very effective natural solutions that can work very quickly.
Okay, and check out your local health food store for them. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks, Kathy.
Okay, bye-bye, Kate. I'd like to thank Alan, the producer of today's show, and I'd like to thank all the radio stations across Canada who carry our program. Have a healthy and happy